Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this week's Runner's World podcast with me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
It being Suicide Awareness Week, I spoke with runner and cyclist Leon Cerrone about his own battles with depression and how running has helped him since he attempted to take his own life. But joining me this week for a little bit of an intro chat, Jane.
Hello, I'm back.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I am still at home, still doing some very boring runs around Clapham and Battersea, and yeah, just getting a bit sick of 2020, to be honest. Trying to say that in a positive voice so our listeners don't tune off after like 2 seconds.
Well, no, I think, well, we know this podcast is going out a bit later this week because of Suicide Awareness Day on Thursday, which is when everyone will be listening. But it's Wednesday, and the government last night decided to reduce the groupings for numbers back down to no more than six, which will be a challenge for run clubs, which have probably just been enjoying having group runs again. So yeah, I don't think the vibe is particularly positive today, but we'll be upbeat. There is some good news out there. And that is the return of Park Run.
Yes, very exciting. I think really uplifting for all those beginners who have been getting maybe a bit demotivated by now if you've just been kind of doing the same run week and week and week.
I think for everyone, actually, the return, because it's just in England at the moment, Scotland, Wales, yeah, and Northern Ireland have their own COVID restrictions in place, in a letter on the Parkrun site, Nick Pearson, who's the global CEO, pointed out that the timeline will adjust whenever restrictions move, and that's what's happened for England, along with government rulings and UK Athletics and their own survey that they commissioned. They've sort of worked out how safe it is for these events to go ahead. And you know, they've deemed that it is, which is, you know, I think as fair a process as they can go through to get to this stage.
I think I saw on Twitter this morning that they have said that as the races aren't returning till the end of October, it should all be fine. The government, I think there's a briefing at 4 o'clock, so it might all have changed by the time you're listening to this, but hopefully, I think it doesn't apply to sporting events. I think it just applies to kind of meeting your friends in a park. So hopefully park runs, this won't affect things and it will all still be going ahead, and we've still got a month to wait, but it doesn't feel that long in the grand scheme of things, does it?
No, it's good. And I think that again, in the statement that they made, they really touched upon how, you know, Parkrun, yes, it's a weekly event for people to come together and run 5K. And, you know, that's one element of it. But the sort of the fitness, the well-being, something that I talk about with Leon in the podcast and the conversations about the mental well-being that running can bring. Mm. And, you know, Parkrun, I think, had a really significant role in a lot of people's lives for that weekly dose of community, of belonging, of all these sort of elements that sort of tied in with just, you know, meeting up for a run. And I, you know, it coming back, I think will probably bring quite a lot of joy and a bit of, you know, and a positivity in it from at the end of a dark time. So, you know, I think it's definitely a nice move to see that coming back, and, you know, that they've taken all of the correct precautions to bring it back. What about you? How's your running been?
Well, I've got a slight injury in my foot, which I I can safely say is from doing a virtual half marathon in the Alpha Flies, which is like a real kind of awful runner brag, isn't it? That, you know, I just got injured in my Alpha Flies. But yeah, it was my first ever virtual race, and I thought, I'm just going to go really big here. And like, I can't say I enjoyed it, to be honest.
Is this the shoe or the race?
The shoe is amazing. The shoe is great. I think I'm probably not strong enough to run in said shoe, because I think that's why I've kind of hurt the arch of my foot a bit, where I've got a bit tired and tried to run too fast. But the race, I mean, I can't say it's a race, because I have to admit to our lovely podcast listeners who will probably judge me, but it's fine. I can take it. I deserve it. I did have a cheat. I stopped to buy water because I didn't want to carry water with me, because it was such a hot day. And I obviously stopped at the traffic lights and paused my watch. And
so the pausing. I see. I was wondering how you buying water was cheating, but I see what you mean. You paused your watch.
Because you have to queue, Ben. You have to be 2 meters apart and queue. And I didn't have a mask, so obviously I couldn't go into a shop. I had to wait till I got to like an ice cream van and then stand in a queue of children who take forever to decide. It would have added about 20 minutes to my time. So I thought, I've got to pause my watch. But that is cheating. And I'm really ashamed of myself. And I, of course, ran a PB because I was wearing those shoes. But it doesn't count. I won't accept it.
So you sort of ran a decent 10k, had a nice 20 minute break, and then ran another decent 10k.
Exactly, yeah. Pretty much like that's literally like running a marathon over 3 days and being like, I've got a PB. It's not fair, it's not right. I'm ashamed of myself, and I accept all the judgment that I get when people listen to this and are appalled. Who do you think I am?
But, you know, I mean, well, if anyone else is thinking of taking on a virtual race, there's a fantastic Runner's World podcast episode on how to run your perfect virtual race, which we recorded with Kieran the other week. So have a look at that. Jane obviously hasn't listened.
I've not listened. Don't listen to me. Don't cheat. Because you'll just feel bad about it. You're only cheating yourself. There's no one else there to see it. So I could have just put my time up and been like, look at me. And only the people that really cared and went onto my Strava and saw the elapsed time would have been like, you're a big fraud. So I think it's just time to hold my hands up and be honest with the world.
I respect that honesty. I really do. I think that's... The world of virtual racing is prone to cheating. So, you know, honesty is pretty good, I think, at this point.
Yeah, there we go. Come at me with all your hate. Actually, please don't. I can't take it. I'm a fragile person. So don't come at me with any hate.
I think everyone else is dealing with their own stuff right now. I think they'll probably let this one slide.
Hopefully.
Right, in light of that revelation, Jane, I'm just going to have to bring on our guest of the week. So a couple of things. Apologies for the slight chewing sound at the start from me. It was very, very unprofessional. But we were eating cannolis. And I'd stuffed one and a half in my mouth, and I sort of misjudged, I think, how long it takes to eat one. And also, most importantly, we do discuss Leon's own experiences with attempted suicide. So some listeners may wish to pause here and revisit this podcast when they feel ready.
Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Well, mate, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast this week.
Thank you for having me.
We wanted to have a conversation around the fact that it is Suicide Prevention Week, a sort of week dedicated, I guess, to raising awareness around the topic of suicide in relation to mental health, and particularly men are the predominant sufferers and final victims of suicide. But before we get into that, this is running. So we should chat about some running.
Let's do it.
Because your story kind of ties in. Your lowest point was kind of like the start point of the running up.
More or less, yeah. I mean, I'd ridden for years road bikes, and I had quite a bad accident at the end of 2017. Kind of managed to kind of break 6 or 7 bones in my left arm, and was obviously unable to ride for a little bit. And bit of Instagram ad sponsored advertising popped up for the Hackney Half Marathon to kind of place he's still left, and I was sat on the sofa and thought, why not? Just do it until I can ride my bike. I'll probably hate it, and then throw away the running shoes and get back on the bike. And you know, I kind of fell in love with running, and that's kind of been all I've doing. I'm kind of just getting back into riding the bike again and falling in love with that. But yeah, running has been, you know, predominantly the main sport for the last kind of 2.5 years, really.
A lot of cyclists who get into running straight away, they've got the engine, but the legs aren't quite there for the whole effort. Were you like one of these guys who just flew out there and then like the injuries, and or is it just like,
you know what, I was super lucky. I didn't get any real bad injuries until kind of about a year into running. I was kind of the first year injury free, a couple of niggles here and there, you know. I had sore shin for a couple of weeks, but I just kind of ran through it, and sore knee for a couple of weeks, did some stretches and got through it. Nothing that kind of kept me out. It wasn't until about a year down that I really started, I got, you know, I had a kind of a year and I just seemed to be get over one injury and I'd get injured again. So
the true running experience.
Yeah, I was I was quite lucky the first year, and I think that's why I enjoyed it so much. And then the second year I was all right, running sucks because I'm injured every other 5 minutes. But yeah, touch wood, this year I've been pretty much injury free. It hurt my calf at the start of the year, but apart from that, it's been pretty good. Then there goes the jinx. Yeah, I've jinxed myself now.
Have you found not racing?
I haven't been that bothered, to be honest. I know a few people and friends of mine have been a little bit frustrated with it, but I think I've just kind of enjoyed just being able to go out and run for kind of running sake, I think, and take... I trained pretty hard up to... I was meant to be running London this year, and I trained pretty hard up to the day. I was still training as if it was going to happen in April.
Yeah.
And then even after that, carried on training quite hard, and then most people always knew that it was not going to happen. I know people were holding on to a shred of hope, but I think I was in the more realistic camp and kind of knew by kind of mate probably wasn't going to go ahead. So I've just been running and doing the odd session every now and again, and not trying to put too much pressure on anything at the moment. And like I say, riding a bit more, so my running mileage has come down and the riding mileage has gone up, which is a nice balance, I think.
You're gonna do the virtual?
No.
No interest?
Yeah, I've got no...
No.
I'm sorry, London Marathon, I've got no interest in running any type of virtual race. I think, yeah, I kind of need to be on a proper starting line, and I admit I haven't got the kind of the get up and go to do a virtual race with just me. And yeah, I think that's the whole point, isn't it? The crowds and the whole build up to the day and being in the starting pen and queuing up for the toilets and all that is part of the experience. And I think, yeah, for me, yeah, like I say, sorry, London, not for me.
I think that a lot of people are taking that kind of... It does take a lot of extra motivation to put yourself under the pressure, I think, of, yeah, of like racing hard, because you want to do your best, right? Yeah. No one wants, I mean, I know that the whole notion of getting it done this year might not be that you're going to be PBing, but at the same time, that's what you race for.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to put yourself on that
position. I mean, I've got the utmost respect for anybody that's going out to do it. I mean, to get out on your own or just a small group of you and go, like you're saying, really put yourself in the hurt locker. I've got a lot of respect for anybody that can do that, but yeah, I'm just not.
We talked about a bit, like you mentioned just then, like how running just for the pleasure of it was kind of like the lockdown vibe and what was happening with the whole thing. And I think a lot of people have taken that on, and especially with lockdown and the increase of people suffering from depression, which we talked about, actually I talked about it in the last podcast, the rise in people suffering from mental health issues because of the situation with lockdown. Yeah. And how running has, you know, been actually quite cathartic in allowing people to sort of have control over probably a situation which is completely out of everyone's control. Is that something that running does for you? Is that kind of like all sport? Is it particularly running?
I found running more cathartic. I think, I mean, we'll probably get into this a little bit further in the podcast, but I've been suffering with depression for a long time. And I did use the bike as an escape because it's kind of something you can go and hurt yourself on and, you know, kind of take your mind off stuff. But as you alluded to, you know, before we started the podcast, riding in London is not great, you know, so it's kind of, and even in the lanes, you kind of always have to be switched on, if that makes any sense, because the white van man or the taxi guy is going to swerve out or a pedestrian is going to step out, whereas I felt with running, you could just get yourself to a park and I feel like you can just switch off completely and kind of lose yourself, yeah. Which is why I kind of found it the best thing for me when it comes to depression, probably. I can just go out and, you know, get myself to Regent's or the canal or Hackney Marshes and just kind of drift away and not have to worry about getting ran over.
Because we've spoken briefly about this before in terms of it's often touted kind of almost like a solution, which is not the case. So we're not there's never a point of saying like if you're suffering then you can achieve a balance through just exercise.
Or
the thing we talked about was meditation, and there was a thing of just like, oh, if you meditate it can help, but a lot of people find actually that worsens symptoms because you're putting yourself in a bubble.
I couldn't do it. I tried, you know, and that thing wasn't for me. Like you say, it kind of did make me feel worse because I just couldn't get it, and I was just like, this is just no.
But I think this is it with running. I think that we'll always talk about the benefits of it from a mental health point of view, but it's one of the elements of dealing with it. It's not the complete solution. No. And I think that's with running, and you know, that's how you've used it, I guess.
It was definitely a small cog a small piece of a big cog for me in helping me to deal with it. I was going to say get better, but I mean, it's an ongoing thing for me. It's something I'll deal with forever. So it's definitely just a small piece of the puzzle in how I, you know, I deal with things if I'm having a bad time, and just in deal with life in general. I think even if you're not struggling with depression, just running in general, I think can help anybody just deal with life basically. Yeah, but it's definitely a small piece of the puzzle that I'm, you know, still trying to figure out with dealing with depression and so on and so forth. That's for sure.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So when was the first time in your life that you, not necessarily diagnosed, but felt that there was something happening in your sort of in your head that you weren't?
Kind of mid to late teens, I was all... kind of struggled, and you know, I first tried to take my own life kind of just about to turn 21, and you know, back then it wasn't spoke about, or if it was, it was kind of like, oh, you're not depressed, you just, you know, kind of get on with it, you know, you're not, there's nothing wrong, you're just having a bit of a bad day. So I actually didn't get diagnosed until I was 36, 2018. I'm trying to do the math. Yes, I was kind of like 36 years old, so I just kind of muddled on with, you know, life, you know, and dealing with it with how most people probably try and start off dealing with depression, you know, self-medication and all the things you do, drinking and all the other stuff you do to try and kind of block things out. So, yeah, I've kind of always struggled with it, really, but, yeah, didn't get a proper diagnosis until I was 36.
What was the thing that made you seek that diagnosis rather than the medical help?
So going back to the bike, the bike crash, I think it was a kind of that year, 2017, I was getting worse and starting to feel worse. And the girl I was dating at the time, I kind of said, oh, you know, I'm, you know, dealing with I think it's depression, or I'm really not well, and didn't really admit it fully and go and get any help. And kind of the end of that year, I broke up with a long-term girlfriend that I was with, you know, had a bike crash, had to move out of a flat we were renting together, and it was kind of the perfect kind of storm, you know. And that whole thing that happened at the end of two days before New Year's Eve, I kind of shattered my left arm, and kind of woke up 1st of January that 2018, and I was kind of sat in a flat or a house on my own that I didn't want to be in, with lads that are still really good friends of mine. Sorry guys, but I didn't want to live with you because you were still partying and doing stuff that I was well out, you know, well over. And kind of just broke down, and I put a whole post on kind of Instagram to kind of say, like, you know, I suffer with depression, and to force myself to go and get help. Because I'd put on a front for so many years, you know, happy-go-lucky Leon, you know, he's on Instagram dancing, and he's, you know, works in nice shops, and he's got nice clothes, and he rides his bike, and I have got a great life, and I wouldn't want anybody to, you know, give me sympathy, because, you know, I did have a nice life and still do, but I was just really suffering inside, and that was a thing I needed to do, was kind of admit it openly. And I went and got, you know, went and got help then. I mean, in between that, I again tried to take my own life before getting before getting to see a doctor. I again tried to take my own life, and some friends literally, you know, dragged me to the doctors. Friend of mine, George Marshall and Scott, who lives in Brighton, come up from Brighton to make sure I got taken to a doctor where I was diagnosed with kind of severe depression and put on antidepressants.
And you're still on those?
Still on the brain biscuits, as I like to call them. Yeah, yeah. Still on them.
And is that, like, again, because I think there's, I mean, we could talk about stigmas around this forever and ever and ever. I think that medication is one of them. People kind of see it like, if you live that medicated life, you're kind of like, it's a crux that you won't shift, or it's like a, you know. But for you, that's been a...
It's part of my daily routine now. I get up, I make myself a coffee, have the tablets with my other vitamins that I have in the morning, and it is just, I'm completely over it. At first I was terrified and I didn't really like it, and I was like, I'm like a little bit what you said, I was like, I'm gonna be on these forever, and didn't want to do it. And but now I'm just kind of, if I'm on them forever, I'm on them forever. If I get off them, I get off them. It's just a thing that it's the part of my morning routine. I won't tell you the other things I do in the morning. That's but it's just part of the morning routine that I go and do. So I don't, like I said, but it is still a big stigma. And the thing I did for Mr. Porter, the interview for them, I mentioned that, you know, the first incident I had, my mum and dad were at hospital, and I overheard them, you know, the nurse at the time kind of mentioned antidepressants, and my dad kind of lost his temper a little bit and said to the nurse, like, he's not effing going on them, he doesn't know, it's not, you know. Massive stigma back then, you know, that was early 2000s. There wasn't this kind of chat and stuff wasn't being spoken about then. It was very much, pull your socks up, get on with it, you're not sad,
yeah,
you know, just deal with it kind of thing.
How have you seen the education, because you are now, you mentioned the Mr. Porter video, and if anyone listening hasn't seen it, Leon has done a video with Mr. Porter and with your friend, filmed by George,
who was with me on the day I crashed kind of thing, and has been a big part of,
yeah,
you know, my recovery.
And it's a collaboration with Rafa as well.
It was. So, yeah, Mr. Porter did a charity jersey. They have a charity called HIM, Health in Mind, and they did a jersey with Rafa, and I've got a friend that works at Mr. Porter, Ben, and he kind of approached me and he was like, look, we're doing this jersey and it's about mental health, and we kind of, would you be willing to tell your story if you felt comfortable with it going out to to the world. And I've been very upfront since those posts. I went for about another 8 months posting about how I was dealing with things. And it's all out there if you want to scroll through my thousands of daisy pictures and puppy pictures on Instagram, you know. I am very upfront with what I'm going through and what I went through. So I said yes straight away, and the response has been amazing. I think they've sold out of all the three jerseys they did to... that was raising money. All the money was going to their charity. So the response has been amazing, and I've had some really nice messages back, you know, saying to from people how it's helped them. And
there's some scary stats out there about the increase in depression and suicides and suicide attempts from younger and younger people. And I don't know, social media has got this sort of like great, has this huge impact on the pressures that people can feel. And the fact that you're using it almost like unveiling, or sort of that sort of, you're being able to use it as a way of being as honest as possible. Yeah. Do you think that that's, you know, there's a side of social media that you know, that allows you, I know you personally, but maybe others could use it in that way of just, it allows them the freedom to just be like as open with it as they can?
Social media definitely has its bad side, and I still see that when you go and scroll through things. But yeah, for me it was, I used it as a bit of a, to force my own hand. It's kind of like, you can't on New Year's Day tell everybody you're suffering with depression, and then on the 2nd of February kind of go, oh, April Fools, it was my way of kind of forcing myself to get help, because I'd kept on putting it off. But then it did turn it to me. That was again a piece of the puzzle. It was quite cathartic. I just, you know, I'd sit at home and I'd write out, you know, what I was feeling and what, you know, and spoke about trying to take my own life again and put it out on Instagram for everyone to see. And that's not going to be for everyone, you know. It is quite a brutal thing to do, I guess. And thankfully, I had a lot of people around me that were, you know, were amazing. It's probably too long. We haven't got enough time for me to list everyone on the podcast to say thanks to. But the response I had was overwhelming. So I know I'm in a lucky position where I had people to back me up, you know, because there's a lot of people, if they probably did that, it might not go the way that it went, you know, because social media can be brutal. I mean, that's the one thing I was worried about with the video was the trolls. And again, thankfully I had two, and they were taking the mick out of my accent, and I kind of thought, fair dues. I had to kind of I'll give them a little like on their comment. I was like, yeah, I mean, it could probably do with subtitles, but there you go. So the response to the video has been amazing, and the response to me being open on social media was amazing. So yeah, it is.
Yeah. I think it's definitely part of the, part of the necessary improvement perhaps towards an understanding of what having a mental health illness and what can put people in a position where suicide seems like the only option. And I think, again, was actually a friend of yours and I's, Nick, posted something earlier today. I think it was about the scale of education.
Yeah.
And you sort of have these, much like this week, an awareness week or a day where your people are actively posting on social or making it their sort of their daily, well, much more this podcast, it's an effort to sort of like raise awareness, but it's a set period of time, it's a set moment, it's a week or a day or something like that. Whereas, do you think the education towards mental health, as someone who's, you know, from the 2000s up until now, like that daily presence of it, do you think that's changed enough, or is it, you know, is it?
I think it's still got a long way to go, but it's definitely, you know, I don't even remember there ever being a mental health week when I was, you know, growing up as a kid. At the beginning, when I was really suffering, there wasn't anything. Maybe that's because social media wasn't the presence it was or is now. Mm. You know, the early 2000s, MySpace or Facebook, probably still Bebo. Back then, Bebo. So it wasn't as easy, but now it is at your fingertips. So maybe that's why people are seeing it more, because it is a bit more, you know, everything's in the palm of your hand now, whereas before you had to ask Jeeves and do a dial-up to get any kind of anything like that. So it's definitely more prevalent, but I still think there's more of a way to go. I mean, I guess it's a hard subject to speak about, and I guess, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, even coming here today to talk to you, I have inherent things built into me around, and I mean, you know, if you take how it's treated in religion. The idea of taking your own life is a sin,
yeah,
right? So you've got people who are religious have that built into them. Society is based around religious thinking.
Yeah.
So there's a whole world of shame that's kind of everyone adopts, and that makes that whole thing difficult, I think, for conversations to happen around. I mean, if I put it to you,
yeah, like, I guess it is, isn't it? Because everybody, you know, people, I've heard the, oh, it's such a selfish thing to do, and, you know, that's phrases that abandon you. You don't think about the people you leave behind, but unless you are at that point, you're not thinking about anybody else. Yeah. And I guess it is a selfish thing to do, but when you're at that, your lowest, I'm sorry to say it, you're not thinking about, I wasn't thinking about my mum or dad, I wasn't thinking about, you know, my best friends that I'd known since nursery and that, you know, nieces or nephews, my head was so clouded and I didn't see any light at the end of the tunnel. You're not really bothered about anybody else, you just want the world to swallow you up and stop, you know, that, so it is, there is a lot of shame and stigma on it, but you're not thinking about anything, no. You know, anything else, to be honest.
I was sadly, I had a friend who took his own life. Used to work with him, and it was that situation where, and you hear it over and over again. It was the person that you least expected it to be. I don't know how. What's the next stage? How do you elevate a conversation? Like, is there more people need to, like, is it a school-based thing? Is it like an education?
I was going to say that. I mean, how young do you start having this conversation and, you know, telling guys, or just not guys, but girls, just people in general, it's okay to not be okay, and, you know, you can talk and ask for help. It's difficult, and I guess when you say depression, or, you know, you expect somebody to be, you know, the great unwashed, not looking after themselves, you know, and moping around all the time. And most people that I have spoken to since me being so open and have got in touch with me and, not, you know, DM me and personally and said, you know what, I struggle as well. You wouldn't think, you know, these guys or girls, you know, they've all got good jobs, you know, they all look amazing. They never look like they're suffering, and I think that is the thing with depression. It is, you know, it's such a hidden killer for, you know, because people don't you know, wear it on their sleeve. You do kind of try and hide it, like I did for years.
Exactly.
And that is the hardest thing, like what you just said, you know, people say I wouldn't expect it from them, because you don't go around, you know, like sad sack from, you know.
Plus, if you are, I mean, this is all speculative, but if you're having those thoughts, you'd have to explain the sort of like the thinking. But I guess it's before you reach that point of feeling suicidal is when you would actively seek help rather than the suicide.
Yeah.
Was that not?
I mean, like I said, I reached out first, and then I, you know, I don't know what it was. Even after reaching out and having the response I had for, like, saying I was struggling, I still, you know, I just didn't see the point of trying to get better. I don't know what it was. Even after me, you know, saying I'm suffering and people were like, you know, we're here for you, I still kind of, I was in the shop one Wednesday and I don't know what it was. It was just like a switch and I was like, you know what, I'm done. I was just stood on the shop floor and I was like, you know what, I don't want to go through all the seeing a shrink and getting better. And I just, you know, I was just like, I'm just over it, and locked up the shop and took myself off, and that was it. Went and sat in a park, and, you know, thankfully, you know, a few friends kind of stopped me from doing it, you know, and the police were called, and I was talked out of it. But it's just a switch. I didn't get up that morning and think that was going to happen. I don't know. It was the weirdest thing ever. Just stood on the shop floor on my own and was just like, you know what, I'm over it.
That's hard to hear, you know. Like when someone's, because it's difficult to comprehend, I guess, someone who's not ever suffered from it from that point of view.
It still freaks me out now, because it was as easy as choosing what I would have for lunch. You know, I just stood there and I was like, oh, yeah, you know what, that's it, I'm done. I'm tapping out. And went home and got what I got to needed to do it, and that was it. And walked to Finsbury Park, and I was ready to, you know.
Well, I'm glad that you're friends.
So,
you know, good friends.
Yeah, you are. I won't go through the list, but thank you.
Yeah. Right. Well, look. What's next? Running.
Cross country, I hear, is back.
Ooh.
Because it was due to be cancelled, but I'm hearing rumours that it may be back later this year. So I'm going to try and.
You're gonna be pulling on the black and white.
I'm going to be pulling on the black and white of Highgate. So yeah, I'm going to concentrate on cross country, I think, because normally I'm training for a marathon, and Lewis, my coach, is not very keen on letting me do cross country when I'm training for a marathon. It's too easy to get injured. Sorry, Lewis. I think, yeah, I'm going to have a chat with him this week or next week. And now cross country is back. Give that a crack, and also try and get my 5 and 10k PB down there. There's no kind of big marathons this year to train for, and try and mix up kind of riding the bike and running, which I have noticed riding the bike seems to be helping my heart rate actually a little bit. Training on the bike, it seems to, when I'm running, my heart rate seems to be a little bit lower. So kind of got it in my head that I'm going to try and do, you know, one long ride a week. And at the minute, I'm kind of managing about 65-70k a week, and then 200 odd k on the bike, including some commuting. So it's, I'm still getting the
pretty good,
still getting the miles in. Still allowing me to eat cannolis. So yeah, that's the only reason I train anymore now. Not for PBs or marathons or anything like that. My cannoli intake.
Well, we've got some in front of us.
I'm so looking, I keep looking at them. I'm waiting until we finish, so you don't hear me chomping on a.
Yeah. I think cross country is a good shout. I mean, from a COVID point of view, that's as outdoors and uncrowded as it gets, unless you're like, you know, at the front.
Right, yeah, I'm not at the front, so I won't worry about that. It depends, actually. It can get quite crowded at the back. So yeah, in the middle is probably, in no man's land, is probably the best place to be in cross country. So yeah, I mean, that's a rumour I've heard, that he's going to come back. So I'm looking forward to a full splash season about. And splash about and the river crossing at Uxbridge. I haven't landed face first in that yet and got any pictures. I'm lucky enough to not make.
It's 2020. It can get much worse.
Looking forward to that. And it's just, I do really enjoy cross, because it is kind of, you know, the team bond, and you know, you go to the pub after and caked in mud and have a Guinness, and it is really nice. And you can get rid of the watch and, you know, a few inter-team rivalries, you know, even that happens. People want to beat each other. And then, you know, Andy Waterman, you know, runs for Vicky Park. So it's lots of good camaraderie, even if you want to beat each other. The last race of last year, I remember I was in front of Andy for most of it, and then he kind of gave me the lance look back on the last hill and dropped me, and he kind of just looked at me and put the final nail in my coffin. He gave me the look. So thanks for that, Andy.
I like the fact that you've used a lance reference there, casting great suspicions upon Andy.
No, Andy, I'm not saying you're on the. You're not saying you're on the pole. That is not. You're not on the EPO. Sorry. Yeah. No. It's all of his own steam. But yeah, he did give me the old. I felt like Jan Ulrich going backwards, and as Andy went off. So yeah, it's good fun. I think it is. So I'm looking forward to that, actually.
Hey, look, Leon, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Really
for having me.
Appreciate for sharing your story, being honest about it all, and hopefully allow others to, you know, get some help.
Realise it's okay to not be okay. That is the thing that I say. So yeah, thank you for having me on.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Leon Cerrone, and to you, of course, for listening. We have a special listener offer right now to subscribe to Runners World magazine and get 3 issues for just £5. So please visit hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this offer.
The Runners World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all of your favourite podcast apps. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.